Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, there is Amanda Waltz.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Amanda. Everybody missed you.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I can't speak for everyone.
Speaking
of people we missed last week, we also have Danny King.
Hey, Brian, how's it going?
It's fine. How are you?
How's it going?
That's just the kind of great comedy that people, great banter here. That people missed.
So
week.
Danny is referring to How Ha, the newest film starring Viggo Mortensen that we talked about last week on this program. I guess I should get it out of the way. We had a couple of comments about that episode. All of them were very positive. All the people seemed to like the movie. I would love to read those comments and discuss them, but they do all have to do with the movie in its entirety, and especially the ending. So let me just give a shout out to Mauricio and Lachlan Cartland.
Two very loyal listeners.
Yeah, these guys are great, and they always have really great things to say. So if you have seen How Ha, or you decide to watch it, go to the page that we posted the podcast on thefilmstage.com. Check out their comments. Let them know what you think. The movie got a lot of response for us, which is good, because it's a movie that's worth seeing. Amanda.
I'm busy, man. Busy.
As for everyone at home listening, of course, you can comment on thefilmstage.com on the pages that these podcasters are posted on. You can also comment and rate us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. And if you follow the Film Stage on Facebook, you'll see the posts that they go up on, and you can comment there if that's, you know, how you roll. I don't know how the kids are doing it. Should we get like an Instagram going?
No.
Like a Snapchat?
Well, no, I don't know. Sometimes.
All selfies of Brian as he edits.
Just me holding a gun to my head.
Late into the night, burning the midnight oil.
Oh, yeah. It's a goddamn joy. Mm-hmm. So today, we will be talking about The Visit, the newest film from director M. Night Shyamalan. It's been... Ballyhooed is kind of a comeback for him, following a string of critical and commercial failures. What was that noise?
I just think that's funny.
Yeah,
that people
I guess,
are saying it's a comeback.
Oh, wow.
Can't wait for this discussion. Is talking about M. Night Shyamalan himself, a man who burst onto the scene. Actually, he had two films before The Sixth Sense, but really became a name with The Sixth Sense. And let's just say he hasn't lived up to what we all hoped he would be. So we're going to go through some of his films. We have done something like this before. I think it was when After Earth came out.
Oh, really?
If I were a better host, I would have looked into this before beginning to talk about it. But we had, like, the world's biggest critical M. Night Shyamalan film critic fan on. And he gave us an attempt.
Ethan Vespi.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Whew,
he's a devotee of M. Night.
He is. He truly is. But like I said, before we get into The Visit, let's talk about M. Night Shyamalan. I assume that we all at least sort of liked The Sixth Sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah?
It was spooky. I mean, it's a movie you can only really watch maybe once, though. The rewatch value is not high on that movie.
So the drama and the characters, that didn't work for you? The emotional arc of the film?
I mean... There are some things that he does that I found really interesting, but he tries to shove so much stuff into his movies there's that one thing with the little girl who died.
Yeah.
That could have been an entire movie of its own.
And that's funny, because that's the part of that film that everyone forgets about.
Yeah, exactly.
Like there's a whole thing where they're trying to solve the murder of a small little ghost girl. And that's kind of how Bruce Willis helps Haley Joel Osment through his madness.
His, yeah. So I got to say, I like that Haley Joel is having a moment right now.
Yeah, thanks to Tusk.
Yeah.
And, Tusk, what was the other Tusk. One? Entourage?
He was in Entourage. He was also on Spoils of Babylon.
Good Lord. He's pulling a DiCaprio. He like disappeared and now he's coming back and working with auteurs.
He just looks like he's just kind of bigger version of his child self. It's really, really strange.
Inflated.
But good for him. I'm glad. I'm happy for him.
So let's put that aside. What did people think of his latter films? Like I happen to like Unbreakable. And I think that the twist at the end of that movie is sort of unnecessary, but that the movie itself, yeah, as a formal exercise and just as a story, is actually very effective.
Well, his films always have this really amazing magical realist quality that he sort of squanders on just like these ridiculous twist endings. I think he just.
We'll get into that when we talk about my biggest Shyamalan disappointment, which is The Village.
I actually really love The Village.
I wanted to love The Village. It had everything I wanted, but like you said, he pushes way too many things into a film.
Yeah.
And everything that gets set up has to pay off. In Signs, for instance, you know, everyone has a tick, and then mm-hmm. by the end of that movie, that tick has helped them overcome the issue, and by overcoming the issue, they've also overcome their tick. Which is just a theme in all of his movies.
Yeah.
The Village had a really great marketing pitch. You know, it's this tiny village set away from civilization, and there are creatures in the woods, full stop.
Yeah.
In fact, the marketing for The Witch, which should be coming out next year,
yeah,
reminds me a lot of The Village.
It really does. I agree.
Great, because I wanted The Village to be that movie, and I'm hoping that The Witch lives up to it.
Well, the whole thing, and he is a talented filmmaker, because I actually rewatched The Village recently, and there are, even after you learn the first twist regarding the supposed monsters that are in these woods.
Right.
There's that.
We should also say that we're free to spoil any. M. Night
should we
Shyamalan
just spoil
movie,
it? I don't know. Danny, have you seen The Village?
I have, but not for a while. I would really like to rewatch it, but you can talk about it for sure. Well,
I'm just talking about when Bryce Dallas Howard, who is blind, goes on that journey,
right,
and she's going through the woods, and there's a scene where she's being chased by one of these monsters, and you know it's not a real monster, and she's hiding behind a tree, and I think the camera just pans over just ever so slightly to show that there's this monster standing on the other side of the tree.
Right.
It is still fucking terrifying.
Yeah, that was still scary.
Yeah, because who is it? It's crazy how he can do that, but
I was
yet
hoping that the twist in that movie was that there really were monsters.
Oh, yes! Oh, my God. So much better.
Yeah.
So much better.
Than the other four twists that we got. Like he's so good at setting a tone,
yeah,
that it annoys me that he feels like he has to do more. He has a very classical story structure that he sticks to,
mm-hmm.
oh, just to his detriment.
Yeah, well, because I really loved Signs, mm-hmm. And I think this goes back to some of the stuff I talked about during Tom on the Farm, where growing up on a farm and watching a movie like Signs. Again, reliving some of my childhood fears.
And I liked Signs.
I love Signs. I like Signs a lot.
Yeah.
And it's actually one of those things where, and I think this applies a lot to The Visit, where I think a lot of his films are mismarketed mm-hmm. as these very, I mean, there's definitely, they're definitely horror movies, but they have a very clear comedic tone.
Oh, yeah.
And no one, and every single time one of his films came out, they never ever played on that comedic tone. So people would go to these movies just thinking it was going to be a straight horror film, and then there was all these bizarre just comedic moments. Signs is a big example of that.
Signs was hilarious at parts. Everything having to do with Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, he's so stupid and great at that movie. That story he tells about the gum.
Oh, the girl with the gum.
The girl with the gum.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's whispering it.
Yeah, you're like, oh God, is the girl dead? Oh no, she threw up and he was happy that he was chewing gum. So he had
to
put it on.
That's how he knows God exists. It's fantastic.
No, I loved Signs. Though, to play into what you were saying, I heard one of the greatest postmortems of any film ever after I saw Signs with some friends. There were two guys who were walking out of the theater in front of us. I don't remember how long the movie had been out for, because we were like the only four people in the theater. So it was my friend and I who were closer to the front, and these two guys were walking out of the theater in front of us because they'd been further to the back. And the one friend turns to the other and says, "Man, we sat through that whole movie and saw like one alien. I figured there'd be 20, 30 of them spitting shit up, stabbing people." And I was like, yeah, I get that. That's what it seemed like that movie was building towards in the marketing.
And it is just, it's just so weird because it's, like I said, that's how people reacted to it. And that movie is just so, it's such the anti-Independence Day, and that alien invasion movies usually are such on a grand scale that when you, this is so much more focused on, okay, what if you're isolated in this little farmhouse? How would that play out? And it's actually brilliantly done. But yeah, like you just said, it's setting you up to think, my God, there's going to be, it's going to be like War of the Worlds.
Precisely.
So I don't know.
Or like Battle Los Angeles.
Oh no.
I liked that film.
No, you didn't.
I swear I did. That's my greatest cinematic confession that I can make, is that I enjoyed the hell out of Battle Los Angeles.
Man, wow, Brian.
Yep.
We all have our
better than Avatar.
Well, Airbender?
Whoa. No, Avatar.
Oh, Avatar's a terrible movie. God awful movie.
Yeah.
Do you like it, Danny?
It's pretty good.
No. The characterizations in both of those movies, Battle Los Angeles and Avatar, were like exactly the same, except Battle Los Angeles played into it like for fun and for actual pathos at certain points. You know what? I'm not going to defend my love of Battle Los Angeles right now, Danny.
You don't have to.
What's your favorite M. Night Shyamalan film?
So, like, Sixth Sense, Signs, and The Village are all movies I remember watching a bunch of times, but, like, several years ago. So I would have to, like, rewatch them. But this year I watched Unbreakable for the first time. And I thought that was an amazing movie.
Yeah.
Do you know that was supposed to have a sequel? It was supposed to be a series.
Trilogy, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I would love that.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I remember watching that movie and being like, I would watch anything that this guy directs, because there was so much talent in the filmmaking. And it's such an interesting movie for him to make right after, you know, he kind of broke out, because it's so serious.
It is, yeah.
But I mean, just some of the shots, like there's an opening scene on a train and the camera, like, Bruce Willis is like flirting with this girl and the camera's positioned like on the seats in front of them. So the camera's like sort of volleying back and forth, but the seats.
Yeah. Through the seats.
Yeah. And it's just like this incredible scene. And then you like see through the seats that he like takes off his wedding ring as he's talking to her. And then there's like that, in the end, there's like that home invasion sequence that's like pretty amazing.
Like the one heroic kind of thing he does.
That's like one of those sort of magical realist moments that, and then After Earth, I actually haven't seen any of the like mid, like Lady in the Water, The Happening, or The Last Airbender. I saw
Lady in the Water.
Dude. Okay. I kind of love Lady in the Water.
I really want to see
you, Amanda.
It is so bonkers that I kind of loved it. But I will say his meta moments are so just so.
I want to see like the film critic.
Yeah, the famous film critic death scene in Lady in the Water.
Brian Balaban, aw.
Where he like narrates why he shouldn't die at that point. Because Lady in the Water is all about storytelling. And, you know, I don't know. And then casting M. Night Shyamalan himself as like the person who's going to write a book that's going to inspire the man who brings world peace or something.
Jesus.
Oh, boy. I think that's when we started to really lose our patience for him.
And I mean, when it comes to any creative type, this includes musicians, anybody, I like them to have egos. Okay. I like a good ego because I think that does go into them producing good work. Yeah, his ego definitely got way too inflated and in ways that were not productive. The Happening though. Oh, you haven't seen the Happening, Danny?
Yeah, I haven't seen that either.
Wow, guys.
Yeah, I got it.
By that point, I'd kind of given up.
It is.
It had a good trailer.
I have never. I mean, there are a lot of films that make me like infuriated. That just, but this movie is, it's so terrible that I just can't even, like, just thinking about it makes my blood boil. It's so terrible. Jesus. And like, Mark Wahlberg, I hate Mark Wahlberg as a person in general. Okay. As an actor, though, he's also a terrible actor. He's terrible. I mean, he's just, I don't understand why people don't understand this. And I think The Happening proves that. He's so bad in it. And everyone is terrible in that movie. And it's like, whenever people are like, the worst films ever made, I never understand why The Happening isn't on those lists.
Really? I feel like I see it on those all the time.
Not all the time. I've definitely seen a lot of lists that do not include The Happening. And I was like, how can you not?
It's definitely not a beloved film.
It is. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Because they had to move that aside so The Last Airbender could take its rightful place.
Oh, definitely. I can't imagine that The Last Airbender is worse than The Happening. I cannot imagine that. Like, and I haven't seen The Last Airbender, but I just can't imagine that it's so terrible. And I guess like he actually wanted, supposedly he wanted it to be more of a comedy, but that does not translate at all. It's horrible. But like just unforgivably horrible. I guess The Last Airbender was also pretty unforgivably horrible.
Yeah. And meanwhile, After Earth was a competently made vanity project that just, yeah, you know, was pretty dumb.
Didn't Will Smith write that, or did M. Night write that?
Will Smith and his son, I think, had story credits, or maybe just Will Smith had a story credit, but I don't think he wrote the actual script.
Okay. I will never watch that
movie. That movie was dumb.
I just won't watch it.
Don't watch it, but do listen to the How Did This Get Made episode on it.
Oh, I've listened to the episode where June Diane Raphael thinks that
he can blow out candles across space. if the listeners at home don't listen to How Did This Get Made, random, completely unsolicited plug for How Did This Get Made. Look it up.
They make really, they really take some amazing observations. Sometimes I feel like some of your observations, Danny, are June Diane Raphael level observations. In a good way. I think you,
that's,
I
good.
With Queen of Earth, the whole disembodied head thing.
Or the arm.
The arm.
Is she just not supposed to have arms?
I took a screenshot of that image. I should like put it on Twitter. I think the observation holds up.
If you ever have something like that, give it to me and I can put it on the podcast. Because here's a tip for the listeners at home. This is an enhanced podcast. We do have pictures and artwork that appear throughout the podcast in the podcast app.
Mm.
In addition to being able to skip chapters and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if people know that actually exists. I spend so much time doing it, and I just don't even know if anyone cares.
All that work, cool. Man.
All that work. But I would put clips in too, but you know, usually we don't have good clips of the movies we're doing.
Oh.
I was thinking of doing it last week, but who would be able to understand?
Oh, well, from what I've read in the comments, that movie just sounds incredible.
How ha? Yeah.
Just the whole, like, I can't remember what the one observation was, that it happens from, like, a dog's POV.
Yeah, that it might be a dog's dream.
Fantastic.
Perfect. I mean, it's true. It could.
Which is from Freaks and Geeks.
Is it?
They talk about that in Freaks and Geeks.
Oh.
So maybe How Ha is just... based on a conversation from the show Freaks and Geeks.
Oh God. All right. Well, that's it for the history of M. Night Shyamalan. So we should probably get into talking about The Visit, right?
Yeah.
Directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Amanda does not seem enthused.
Oh, I'm enthused.
Okay.
I am. I'm just
Well, this movie stars Olivia De Jong and Ed Oxenbold? Anyone want to help?
The little boy?
Yeah. Ed Oxenbold.
The only person in this film that is recognizable is Catherine Hahn.
Oh, I was going to say Peter McRobbie. Well, Catherine Hahn, too. Yeah.
Who's Peter McRobbie? Isn't the
seen him in stuff.
Old man?
Yeah, I've definitely seen him. Yeah.
I've seen the grandparents before.
Yeah.
Definitely. But I just don't. I can't put a name to the face like Brian can, apparently.
Sorry. He was in Daredevil the TV series. He was in Inherent Vice.
Oh, that's okay.
Boardwalk Empire.
Okay. He does look nice. Yeah. Deanna Dunnigan.
Yes.
The grandmother is fantastic in this film. I will just say that up front.
Okay. Well, anyway, so Olivia and Ed star as Becca and Tyler, who are going to meet their grandparents for the first time. And they can't help but notice that their grandparents are a little weird.
They're estranged grandparents.
They're estranged grandparents. That's why they're only seeing them for the first time.
Well, they're even estranged to the mother.
Right, because then that feeds into the mystery of what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, I was just trying to lead into the trailer, and you now have us talking about the entire plot of the movie.
Okay, we'll pause. I'm sorry.
Okay, so here is the trailer.
Hi, Mom. My parents asked if their grandchildren could visit them for a week.
Here we are.
This is where our mom grew up. I've wanted to spend time with you for so long.
Miss you guys.
Mom, we're having a great time.
I have not seen your Nana this happy in years. Bedtime here is 9:30. It's probably best you two shouldn't come out of your room after that. See you in the morning.
9:30.
What is that?
It's 10:47. We think there's someone outside the door.
What the hell was that?
I think Nana's not feeling well.
Grandmother is fine. It's like somebody talking in their sleep.
What's he doing?
They're weird during the day.
They're just cleaning it.
And even weirder at night?
Mom, there's something wrong with Nana and Papa.
So that's the trailer for The Visit. Amanda, would you like to explain the entire story to us now?
Sorry, Brian.
Were you also laughing during your trailer?
Sorry, I killed your vibe earlier.
I work very hard to keep up the flow of these episodes, and I feel like you just don't respect that.
I don't. I know. I'm sorry. Yeah, The Visit. So I think the reason I find it kind of interesting that people are saying this is a return to form for M. Night is because that there are some differences between this and his previous films, especially in terms of just how incredibly gross this movie is.
So gross. So weird.
Oh, it's so disgusting.
It's pretty gross.
Which I don't think I mean, there's been, because horror films, I mean, there's usually some kind of grotesque quality, but this is just outright disgusting. Which is not something that you really find in, I mean, maybe, I think maybe Sixth Sense has some kind of gross moments, but that's about it. And there's just so many, strange, because this is a found footage film.
Yeah.
Yeah, not really, because it's basically a, so the two children are these incredibly intelligent, precocious, articulate, talented, they're basically homeschooled kids. There's no way that these kids are homeschooled.
That's the first time I think I've ever heard homeschooled used as like an accolade.
But it is, but they're just so weird. They're just
okay,
so
there we go.
Yeah, well, they're weird in ways that it's just like the girl is this aspiring filmmaker, and so she, again, I think this contributes a lot to the meta quality of this film in terms of, which is something that M. Night is so incredibly guilty of. And the little boy is, I think they're, oh, their names are Rebecca and Tyler. That's right.
I believe that I said that earlier.
Oh, did you?
Oh my God.
I was trying to remember their names.
Whatever, bro.
Whatever. So Tyler is an aspiring rapper, who just, his whole shtick is almost like Disney Channel level silly, just the way he throws around and just the way that
something that you would see on Even Stevens.
Yeah, it's very Even Stevens, where you know, he'll say something in slang and his sister will be like, say it in English. I'm like, you're 15, you're older than him, nerd. You should know this. But it's just so Rebecca wants to make a documentary about their trip to their grandparents' house. They're staying with their grandparents for a week, and their mother hasn't seen the grandparents. Their mother, who's played by Catherine Hahn, hasn't seen the grandparents since she left on bad terms when she was like very young and eloped with her high school substitute English teacher. Substitute teacher. And that's where the two kids came from this marriage. And then the father left. And it's, so the kids are very upset that the father has basically left them to start a new family in Florida. And so that is what, so that's the emotional character arc for these two kids, is that they're sort of dealing with this recent, not, well, I guess not recent. I think Catherine Hahn at one point says it's been 3 years since he left.
It's been some time.
Yeah, it's been some time. But it's also, the film also serves as a way for this girl to deal with her father leaving, which contributes to this very, it's, I don't even know if it's worth saying that this film has a very uneven tone, because it is so obvious.
I believe that the tone that they were going for is simply what the fuck.
Yeah, and it is, it's seesaws.
Which I believe between, in a cheese.
It's seesaws between mawkish and juvenile horror to a degree where there's a scene where, and this is, I think this is even in the trailer, where they hear this noise outside, and there, it's this weird scratching noise, and they open it and it's their grandmother completely naked scratching at the wall, and they shut it really quick and latch it, and the son or the brother looks at the camera and goes, I'm blind. And it's this, supposed to be this comedic moment, but it's like, what? No. So it's just so, like, this really very unsettling thing just happened, but we're supposed to laugh about it. I don't know. It's really strange. And my friend and I, it made me wonder if people would pick up on the comedic aspect of it. Because I think people who tend to go, like I said before, people who tend to go see M. Night films go thinking it's going to be this really spooky horror film. But we went to the bathroom after this film, and we were sort of talking about it and laughing about the film. And this woman, this delightful woman in an embroidered denim jacket and gigantic Lion King the musical tote bag, was like, did you guys just see The Visit? And we were like, yeah. And she's like, I thought it was hilarious. And I was like, I want to hang out with you. You get it, lady. She's like, I don't understand.
I think that people, at least from, first of all, I usually hate going to public screenings of anything. I'm sorry. I'm that asshole.
Everybody does.
Yeah. And like, people were being really loud and annoying before the movie started. And I was like, oh God, here we go. But honestly, seeing this with a crowd probably like boosted it a full star rating for me.
There was the one moment, I can't remember what moment it was. There's so many just like moments in this film where it's like, you're basically like, don't go in that closet. Don't go in. Like that kind, it's that kind of, like I said, like juvenile horror where this woman just very loudly said, no. I just started laughing. It was so
I think the champion moment at my screening was when someone screamed, that bitch got a knife. it was so good.
Oh, that is good. Yeah, this, I almost feel like this film sort of baits those kind of lines though, or those kinds of responses.
It totally does. I think this movie, more than trying to even be scary, is trying to be fun.
It is fun. I will say that.
And I think that it succeeds at being fun. Danny, do you have was it fun for you?
Yeah. I had a great time.
Did you have any people at your screening who were screaming?
It was a weird crowd. The lady next to me was like on her phone for like half of it. But when she wasn't on her phone, she seemed to be really into it. So it was like, she just didn't need to watch the whole thing. She would just enjoy snippets and then like go back to her phone. But yeah, I agree.
Candy Crush.
Yeah, I don't know what she was doing.
You said on your phone. I assume that you meant she was talking on it.
Oh no, she was like scrolling and just browsing.
She had that second screen experience. He was live tweeting it.
But yeah, I thought the movie was a lot of fun. I agree that it just like, part of the entertainment of it is that it just keeps you so off balance in terms of if something is supposed to be funnier than it is scary or scarier than it is funny. That image of the grandmother scratching the wall is like so horrifying, but then when the kids react to it and it's just like they kind of move on right away, it's just this like weird tone that both downplays the terror, but then at a certain point it ratchets it up really well. But also this movie, it's like, I guess on the whole it seems sort of just like a minor sort of clever found footage take by Shyamalan, but there's still these scenes that have this like out of nowhere emotional like intensity. Like there's one scene with when the brother is filming the sister and he talks about how she like doesn't look in the mirror and the kid has like this really weird like camera effect where it like moves in on her as she's like tearing up. And the brother himself has his own sort of confessional moment, like this story about playing football.
Well, of course, it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie. So we need to hear two things that people need to overcome.
Yeah.
So they can overcome it later.
But yeah, I mean, like that stuff, I get, maybe it's like over the top, but it's still, I found it very affecting. And there's even, I thought Catherine Hahn in a small role is really good, but there's one shot where she's sending him off to the train station and she's like running after them. Yeah, that shot was so good where she's like, it starts off playful and then she kind of breaks down and then she just disappears. I thought that was,
so
there are just moments where like a fun sort of genre experiment turns into like this very serious, emotional thing that took me off guard. But for the most part, I just sort of had fun being thrown by the tone And I mean, for a found footage movie, he sort of finds a way to still make the movie look good. It's not like queasy handheld for the whole thing. There's a lot of like shots that are just sort of, the camera's just sitting. And so the movie looks pretty clean. And yeah, I enjoyed it. I guess we'll talk about the twist later, but I'm surprised. I actually like wasn't surprised at all by the twist. And most reviews I've read seem to think that it was like shocking. So I wonder what you guys thought about that, because
yeah, we can definitely talk about that in spoilers.
Yeah.
I definitely gave myself over to the twist a little bit. I'll admit it.
Okay.
We'll talk about it in spoilers.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in spoilers, but
spoilers, there's a twist.
Yeah, I kind of what you were saying about the found footage thing is interesting too, because it's like you said, Danny, it's really clean, but he's also there's a lot of comments on documentary filmmaking.
Yeah, like ethics
from the daughter. I can't remember what she says, but she keeps saying, "Oh, I need to get more outside shots to generate tension or to generate."
Yeah.
So there's just all these kind of commenting on how formulae, like the documentary style or the documentary formula, which
like that scene where she's got her brother standing next to the swing
and she's like, don't touch it. Let it organically.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I don't know if he's mocking found footage in that sense or if he's mocking documentaries.
It's messy. I don't know.
It is very.
It could be documentaries. It could be horror films, because usually horror films have a lot of creepy exterior shots.
Oh yeah. Well,
but
especially
in this one, we're stuck with the characters.
Yeah, the swing is definitely a trope of horror movies. Yeah. But it's also, this is a Blumhouse production.
Yes.
Which Blumhouse is very much guilty of producing these very formulaic type horror films. So I don't know. It's just a strange movie. I think this is the film where I turned to my friend and I said, this man is a maniac. M. Night Shyamalan is a maniac. He's a lunatic. Like, he is.
Please go on.
He just is. Like, think, if you really think about this film and everything that happens in it, and I mean, and then you think back to his previous films and everything that has happened in those films, this man is a maniac.
Well, that's he was positioned as like this man with so many ideas and like a perfect storyteller. Like, he had that stupid, was it an American Express commercial where like, he was sitting in a restaurant and like everyone around him was a ghoul or something, and like that the book about him was called like the man who something about dreams, I can't remember. But it, like, that was his mythos, was like, he's this fantastic, creative storyteller who like taps into nightmares. And
well, he's definitely influenced by a lot of very, of course, revered filmmakers. Hitchcock is one, Spielberg, most definitely. But it's almost like he's a bastard stepchild of Hitchcock and Spielberg. It's just, he's just so strange. Like, it's just so, and it's done with such conviction and such, like, it's almost like that thing where when someone makes an experimental, when a really promising talent makes, you know, of course makes something terrible and someone says, oh, why wasn't anyone there to say no to him or her or whatever? Like, there's no one, I don't even think it's that there's no one there to say no to him. I think he's just so, like, he's just such a maniac that it's not even it's not even worth, it's just like, go ahead, just do whatever. I don't even know why you're doing this. I don't even know if I should say no to this. It's like, he's just so insane. And I don't know. I really think that this is the film that broke me in terms of realizing that there's just like, like I said, he is a talented filmmaker, and he does bring a lot of vision to these completely insane ideas. So I don't know.
Okay. So he's a maniac.
He's a maniac.
My thing, I don't know that this movie had to be found footage. And it annoys me that it was, because as fine as it is, you know, I'd even go to say it's good and I liked it. I just don't know that it needed to be found footage. We do get talking to the camera. We do get one fairly effective jump scare that leads to like an actual scene of creepiness and tension.
There's a lot of jump scares in this movie.
Yeah. So, but why does it need to be?
Well, and I think that there's... Go ahead, sorry.
It's also just a little crazy because there's some really beautiful compositions in this movie. I don't know. It's just like, I feel like you could have gotten so many more of those if you weren't stuck with this conceit.
Yeah. Like, what he's if definitely you had limited.
Them, what if you had them doing the documentary, but you still had an omniscient camera?
Yeah, maybe.
That would be possible. You could do that.
Well, because he also brings a very... His films have this sort of... I can't really think of any other word to describe it. Gritty look to them. They're usually sort of a lot of dark tones. And this definitely does not have that. Also, there's a lot of... I think there's a lot of very convoluted like scenarios that work. Like, the payoff is great, but going into them is just kind of strange, where this is a 15-year-old girl and her 12-year-old brother, and I feel like this 15-year-old girl does not act like a 15-year-old usual. Like, again, these are homeschool kids.
No, they're way too smart to have gone to public school. They're not rich enough to go to private school.
Yeah, they are. There's the scene. It's the first really scary scene where they're playing hide and go seek in the crawl space.
Yeah.
For some reason, because it's like, oh, this is our mother's hiding spot from when she was a girl. Let's capture it. And then they start playing hide and go seek. And I'm just thinking, wait, two teenage kids would not be like...
12.
Well, I think I think he turns 13 later in the film.
What?
Maybe. Well, because he says in one of his raps that he's 13.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
So I think he is 13, but I just kept thinking a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old would not be playing hide and go seek in a crawl space. I don't know. It just seems...
That's actually a scene, not to comment on the character like situation, but that's a scene where the found footage thing works really well, just because the cameras are by necessity like so close to their faces that you almost can't really tell what's happening. But or
couldn't
like
you just shoot it that way,
but conventionally.
Yeah, sure.
I guess
that's just one of those scenes where it's like, why the fuck are you holding onto that camera?
But it's just so punctuated by all these scenarios that just seem so... The setup, it just seems so almost unbelievable. Like I said, two teenagers would not be like, let's go play in the crawl space.
I had absolutely no trouble with that scene.
I did. I don't
You're
know.
You're weird.
Maybe I was.
Yeah, I feel like they were just like bored and like.
Yeah, they're bored. They're going around the house. I don't understand. Amanda, really? That's what you're going to hold on to?
Classic
Amanda.
No,
but I'm just saying, it just
Classic
seems very.
Amanda.
I don't
likes
know.
Films with hide and seek.
Look, man, I had a really bad hide and go seek experience.
I'll just sit on their phones, twittering up some YouTube.
That's true. It does set up that they twittering up some YouTubes.
That's pretty good.
Go to hell, Brian.
Thank you.
But no, it does. But I think it does set up that they have no cell phone reception.
Yeah.
So yeah, I understand that, but. I don't know. There was just so many weird things that happened in this film where, like I said, the payoff was great.
Look, these kids have been homeschooled. They have no friends.
they
don't know anything about their parents. You know, their father just left them. They got some emotional things going through. Maybe they just want to play some goddamn hide and seek. Get back to a simpler time.
Oh, Brian.
I just like, you're so hung up on the hide and seek.
I'm not really really
there's
hung
so
up
many
on
things
it.
In this movie that are unbelievable, like teenagers playing hide and seek.
It's a little unbelievable.
Okay, I cannot wait until we're in spoilers. You crazy bastard. Oh my god.
But no, I did enjoy this film. But there are a lot of jump scares. This is a very traditional, like, all right, let's just get to spoilers. I don't even want to. There's more to say.
Yeah. Okay. So a well-made film, even though the found footage is dicey and may not be necessary.
Well acted, I thought.
Yeah. Oh god.
Really?
The girl Olivia.
I thought the kids were good.
Oh, I did not think that.
I didn't like Tyler, but I liked Olivia.
I thought they were pretty stilted.
Are you fucking with me?
Oh, those really?
Kids, I thought the kids' performances were very stilted.
No.
I did not think they were good. But I don't think it was them. I feel like M. Night's films tend to be very...
But she, like, for a 15... I don't know, how old is this girl, actually?
I mean, she's got to be a teenager.
She born in really 98.
So she's...
17?
17, yeah.
Right. Okay. So I mean, but she worked her way around that fucking crazy ass dialogue, and you know, where she was asked to show emotion, she worked really well.
Like I said, I don't think it's necessarily the actors; it's just his very clunky dialogue. But yes. I thought the grandparents were fantastic.
I liked Peter McRobbie in this. He was great.
Oh, I love the grandmother.
Voice.
She's fantastic.
Mother was great.
Catherine Hahn was fantastic.
Oh, Catherine Hahn's beautiful. I love her so much. She's definitely like one of my favorite.
Like that whole scene where she was running after the train,
and she's on a cruise with her boyfriend.
Yeah,
that was great.
Because that's the other thing: the kids want to give their mother and her boyfriend time to connect.
Yeah,
it's pretty.
They're so thoughtful.
Two sweet homeschooled kids.
I was about to say that homeschooling. There was real heavy emphasis on empathy.
They haven't been jaded by the public school system.
God damn it. Anyway, so yeah.
Let's talk about Yahtzee.
Let's bust out those dice, put them in a cup, and play some Yahtzee. So,
my God.
I guess the grandparents have been acting weird, real weird, and the tension's been building, and finally, you know, the kids are like, we have to get out of here. So when the mother gets home, they get on Skype with her, like, Mom, listen, just get over here now and get us out of here. These people are nuts. And the mom is like, what are you talking about? It'll be fine. And like, I was getting, the theater I was in, it started to take over me because I almost wanted to scream at her, just get in the car. She was like, I just got back from vacation. I'm so tired. I don't want to drive up there. And the kids, you know, take the computer and show them, show their mother, the grandparents standing outside by the chicken coop. The mother's like, who, you've been staying with those people for a week? Those aren't my parents.
Yes.
Which worked for me. That moment, I was like, oh,
I kind of loved it.
I wasn't even thinking about that. The fact that those people could be just fucking strangers.
Well, because you're being so misled, or you're being led into thinking that something almost supernatural is going on.
Yeah.
Because there's that whole interview that the daughter does with the grandmother where she's talking about how there are aliens living in a pond.
Did you actually believe that this would go to aliens?
Dude, again, he is a maniac. I was like, this could be fucking pond aliens.
Oh shit, they're in the well.
Totally into it. Yep, what's gonna happen.
I wanted the movie to do that, honestly. For like, you know, they get away and everything's fine, and then you see like a spaceship lift out of a pond.
I totally, if a fucking spaceship came out of that well, I would have been like, yep,
that called it. Because he is a maniac. However, what happened.
I loved that fucking scary stories to tell in the dark twist.
Yeah.
I actually loved it.
And the best thing is that it wasn't... I mean, it takes a lot. It takes a lot for that kind of a twist to work. I mean, like, you gotta have the mom who doesn't see the grandparents at all. Apparently the kids have never even seen a picture of their grandparents.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of stuff. People keep coming to the house to look for the grandparents. The grandparents are always on a walk. So for a second, I thought, like, oh, shit, these kids have straight up murdered their grandparents. And, you know, they're just projecting a delusion or something.
Oh, shit.
Because every time people come to the door, the kids are like, oh, they just went on a walk. It's like, how often are these freaking people walking?
Because people keep showing up. I think the first guy is a doctor at this place.
He's like
an
administrator or something.
Is he?
The grandparents volunteer as counselors at the local psychiatric hospital.
Yeah. Well, you don't know it's a psychiatric hospital until the end, though.
Right. You just think it's like a hospital.
And these people keep showing up and saying, oh, hey, your grandparents haven't come to work in a while. Just wondering how they're feeling.
Been missing since Saturday. And I was like, yeah, because the grandmother's going nuts, obviously. Not the case. The grandparents have been murdered. Mm-hmm. You know what? Speaking of M. Night
Shyamalan. Brutally murdered.
Brutally murdered.
I totally thought that... So there's a scene where Tyler follows his grandfather into the shed and finds, like, a pile of adult diapers. And I... As soon as, like, they had the reveal of, like, those aren't your grandparents, I was like, oh, my God, he has them locked up in the basement, and he is changing.
That's what I thought, too. That's what I thought, too.
That would have been bananas.
Horrifying.
Instead, nope, they're just straight up dead.
They're straight up dead.
100% dead.
And it is, like, and part of me kind of felt like, oh, man, is this film ageist? Because a lot of the reasons they use for people going insane is, oh, you know, your grandmother has sundowners or your grandmother has dementia. And that's why she's running through the house with her hands tied behind her back. Or just, and these kids just kind of roll with it.
Have they never seen an aged person before?
People, I mean, I will say, my grandmother had Alzheimer's. I understand that is a very serious illness. It really does. And I kind of thought of this film as a weirdly, weirdly apt portrait of what Alzheimer's does to people, because it is like, oh, your actual grandparents are dead. Like, that person that you knew is dead and has been replaced with this completely.
So did you think that was like a symbolic thing that they were going to do?
I don't know. I kind of did think of it that way, because it is like, that is what happens when someone is in the throes of Alzheimer's, because they are just like, they lose complete control of their bodily functions. They are not, they just become monsters basically that you cannot handle. It is true.
I only know about Alzheimer's from Deep Blue Sea. So you'll have to forgive me. I've never had to deal with it.
It is true. That's, and I kind of found it, but at the same time, I was like, I don't think M. Night is that. I don't think that he's quite that smart to like.
Well, that was my thing. I was like, you know, there's being weird, and then I kept expecting like, oh, maybe the mother ran away because her fucking parents were psycho killers.
Yeah.
And maybe she gave her children to them because they need a sacrifice and she doesn't want it to be her.
Oh,
I like, kept expecting her to be screwing them over in some way. Like, oh, sorry, kids. Your grandparents have Hansel and Gretel syndrome and they're going to kill you and eat you.
Yeah, and because she's off on a cruise with her boyfriend.
Yeah.
F these kids.
Possible deniability. I don't know where my kids went.
I don't know. What?
It was a crazy couple, broke out of a mental institution, murdered some grandparents, and took their place.
Which, the moment that they find out that they're insane, that they're these imposters, that's when it goes from, it gets turned up to 11.
Yeah, that was when weird and kind of uncomfortable became like, oh shit, get out of the house.
Yeah, it is that Yahtzee, and there is some amazing, again, just these, the two actors playing the grandparents, they are
Robbie
fantastic.
And Deanna Duncan.
Yes, Deanna Duncan, who, I don't know who put that woman, I don't know who did the wardrobe for that woman in the hair, gorgeous. There's that scene where she's sitting at the table and she is in this fabulous outfit, like almost like Hollywood glamour, just beautiful. And she's sitting there smoking a cigarette and ashing it in a teacup. And I was like, oh man, look at this bitch. She is amazing. Like, she is great. But there's that scene where they're proposing that they have a family game night. And the way the camera, I think it's from the daughter's POV. She's holding the camera and the grandmother's standing on the right side of the frame. I can't remember how it's composed, but like the grandmother's standing there. And then out of frame, the grandfather sort of like slides in and he's like, it's Yahtzee time.
I was just like,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. And that's when, you know, you recontextualize all their weirdness and, oh, it's a lot more weird. But that was an effective twist. That was a good twist.
And can we mention the probably the most upsetting, by far the most upsetting moment in this film related?
Are you talking about when a 12-year-old brains a dude with a refrigerator?
Oh no, that's
are you
not...
talking about when a no. young woman stabs an old woman to death with a piece of a mirror?
Nope.
Are you talking about when a bystander is hung on a tree outside for the children to find?
Not even the most
upsetting.
About
when the girl finds the bloody hammer that murdered her grandparents on top of her grandparents' corpses?
Nope, still not the most upsetting.
What could you be talking about?
I am talking about the 12-year-old boy who is a germaphobe getting a very full adult diaper shoved in his face.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about
that. Whoa. Just poop smeared all over his little face.
Yeah.
Everyone in the theater was very upset when that happened.
People in my theater freaked the fuck out.
There were kids in the theater. There were like young kids in my theater, and they giggled the entire time through this movie. And when that happened, everyone was silent.
That is just like such a violation. No one wants that. No one should have to deal with that.
Oh God.
It was. But this is where the M. Night Shyamalan of it all comes in, because we hear the story about the boy freezing and not being able to tackle a guy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he blames his father leaving on, because he froze up on the field. And the girl has stopped looking in the mirror. I guess she doesn't have confidence or doesn't believe that she's worth being around.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to look at herself. And then, you know... The boy is frozen downstairs. He's a germaphobe also. Something that the movie mentions, forgets about for an hour, and then mentions again.
Yeah, because he does a lot of stuff between then and there where it's like, he's touching stuff.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, he was washing his hands. I don't know.
Maybe.
But so the boy gets an adult diaper smeared in his face, and he's frozen. He's just standing there. The girl is locked in a room upstairs with the grandmother. Ooh. And, you know, is scared shitless, as she should be, opens her eyes in a mirror, looks at herself, sees the grandmother come up behind her. The grandmother smashes her head into the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
The girl grabs a shard of it and just fucking chibs that woman to death.
Which I will say, I don't understand why she did. Well, if she was going to do that, then M. Night probably should have taken the very visible... like fireplace pokers that were sitting right there out of the scene.
She was going for that at first.
Well, she kept looking at it because she kept looking away from the grandmother, and it was almost that have you ever seen the video of the ninja cat?
No.
The video of the cat where the camera like looks around the corner and there's a cat, but it's like pretty far away, and then it goes back and it turns the corner again and the cat is like halfway there. And then it goes, that's basically what happens with this grandmother, where she is getting closer and closer, and the girl keeps turning away to look at the fireplace poker, and then looks at the grandmother.
Keeps getting closer.
Which I'm just like, girl, stop looking away.
Just go for the poker. Danny, what was your reaction to this whole crazy, like, the obstacle course of set up kids' neuroses that the kids had to overcome in order to murder their imposter grandparents?
Yeah, it was horrible. It became very brutal.
Here's the thing.
But
please go ahead.
I was just going to... The Yahtzee game was just stunning.
Still? I mean...
Where he's like, I'm the Yahtzee bastard?
Yeah, and I love the brother who's like like, no, you're fine. Just keep playing. We're happy.
The sister kept like egging them on.
Yeah.
Just like being a jerk about it. It's like,
well, the brother is so funny in parts where like that scene you mentioned, Danny, where he's like, this is great. I'm having such a good time. But there's also the scene where they're sort of, because like you said, their grandparents keep going for walks and they're trying to kind of sneak around the house to investigate. And there's the part where they're outside and the grandparents go for a walk and she's like, act like you're playing. And the brother keeps throwing this tennis ball up in the air.
Oh, that was so funny.
And catching it. She's like, what are you doing? He's like, this is how children play.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. Again, homeschooled.
God damn it. I thought that was actually funny because it's like, you know, he's constantly talking about wanting to be a YouTube star. The girl is constantly wanting to be a documentarian. They don't know how to play outside.
Yeah. Like, no, they don't.
We got a tennis ball. Right?
She's like, we're playing. And they're just like throwing this tennis ball up in the air. Yeah, that Yahtzee scene is... And that was actually the thing, because when I saw the initial trailers to this film, I was not interested. And then one night, the trailer, like, they debuted the new trailer, and it was the Yahtzee. It was with her saying Yahtzee with her mouth full of cookies.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, all right.
That was it? Me. That's what sold you?
That was the thing that sold me.
That's fine.
The Yahtzee. It's pretty great.
Danny, how did people in your theater react when the kid got a diaper shoved in his face?
Oh, yeah, that was... It was funny. We saw it at, like, the Regal near us, and right before it, there's, like, a Regal ad where the slogan is, like, we're all the same when the lights go down.
Oh, which is just the creepiest... Yeah,
yeah, it's really creepy, but... when he took the diaper to the face, everyone kind of freaked out, and my friend just turned to me and he's like, we're all the same. I was like, yeah, that's true.
No, your friend sounds, you know, fun.
I don't say anything during movies. You know, my girlfriend is a little more vocal, but the people around us were nuts. So there was a point where my girlfriend turned to me and she said, are you doing all right? Because I was turning to look at all these people talking. And I guess she thought I was, like, freaking out. I was just like, I love these people. And then everyone freaked out when that diaper got shoved in the kid's face. Here's the thing, though. Like, he had things he had to get over. He had to unfreeze. You know, he tackled the imposter grandpa, you know, worked through his germophobia to be able to function while he was doing that. You know, that's a setup I can understand. Like, that makes some sense. The girl had trouble looking in a mirror and then stabbed someone to death with a piece of mirror. Like, that's a reach, I feel.
I think
that's crazy.
I think the greatest line in this film is the scene where, and I think it says a lot about this film, pretty much sums it up, is... Let me find it here in my notes. It's like I can't remember what happens. I think the brother does something stupid and the sister says, oh, you know, this is all about cinematic standards. And he says, no one gives a crap about cinematic standards.
Oh, yeah. What was it? Housemaids of Houston?
Yeah, which is not a real thing.
No, it's not.
No.
Being from Houston, I would know if it was.
But I was just like, oh, M. Night. You rascal. But it's true, because I think this film does. I think this film is just so not concerned with, you know, trying to be a serious film or trying to necessarily just, you know, fit a certain. Like I said again, it seesaws so much between tones. It's just trying to be like a fun, goofy ass movie. And it really works, even though it's, yeah. Oh, man.
And then, of course, there's the real ending where we find out that the mother actually hit her mother, and that's why she didn't talk
to her. Oh, yeah.
It wasn't that she needed forgiveness. It was that she couldn't forgive herself. And then we get the fucking kid rapping again.
Yeah, no. Which I think I actually thought that was kind of funny because it kind of makes fun of how like every film back in the day had like a rap credit song.
I was thinking about that. Yeah,
which usually was recorded by Will Smith.
This is true.
Mm?
Ray Parker Jr.
Mm-hmm. Ray Parker Jr.
Yeah, isn't that the guy who did Ghostbusters?
Yeah. No. That, yeah. You're right. You're right.
Thank you. I guess, you know, we're all pretty on board for this movie, right?
Man, M. Night is back, baby.
That's the weird, it's not really a return to form, because it's not his usual portentous, I just think it shows that he's still capable of surprising people and creating a competent film, which at this point is really all he needed to do.
Really? It's like the bare minimum.
But that was the thing, like, about After Earth. I kept saying, it's not a poorly made film. It's just not a good film.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
The spatial integrity of every scene was there. Apparently, Avatar had a lot of problems with stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
Well, the lead kid in that film isn't even a professional actor. He was chosen for his karate skills. I don't know.
Mother
it's
of God.
I'm not joking. Like, he was chosen. Like, I think he sent
Please
M. Night a video
again.
Of. I'm just. I'm sort of mocking at how terrible.
Oh, okay.
Was, like, I'm just sort of mocking at how, like, how terrible the martial arts in that movie looked because it just looked so unconvincing. But yeah, it's he actually sent M. Night a video of himself doing. I don't know what form of martial arts it is, but, and they were like, we want this kid.
Good Lord.
No acting ability whatsoever.
Oh boy.
So I don't know.
Well,
yeah.
let's not talk about the failures. Let's finish mm-hmm. up by talking about how good The Visit was. Definitely an effective little film. Check it out. It is in wide release now. It, because it's Blumhouse, its production budget was only $5 million.
Yeah.
They put some marketing force behind it. I believe it made a little over $25 million.
There's not a lot going on in the box office this weekend.
This is true.
So this is pretty much it.
Well, there was that, and then Perfect Man? A Perfect Man?
Perfect Guy?
A Perfect Guy.
Really
is that Tyler Perry film?
At least I didn't say Perfect Strangers.
Oh, I wish.
Yeah, all right.
Do you really want to see A Perfect Guy, Danny?
Yeah, the trailer looks crazy.
It is pretty crazy.
I mean, like, I'm not expecting quality, just like a fun.
I'm a fan of all the movies that fall into that category of, like, uh-oh, this guy's aggressive.
Yeah. Well, what was the other Idris Elba thriller?
Yeah, that one looked weird. No, yeah.
Oh, so bad.
But no, I like the one where it's like, ooh, I have a boyfriend. Oh, he beat up a stranger. He's probably not cool. Oh, no, he's going to murder me. Sleeping with the Enemy. That's a good
Sleeping
one.
Sleeping with the
yeah,
Enemy.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Excellent film.
Enough.
Enough's a good
enough.
One.
Jennifer Lopez. I don't know about that.
It's the one with Jennifer Lopez.
She like learns to be a kickboxer so she can kick the ass of the guy who's hurting her.
Her ex-husband?
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Good stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know why we're talking about that.
I don't know either.
Let's move on. Very quickly, we'll talk about what's coming to DVD and Blu-ray, and then we'll get out of here. It's
cool.
It's too bad that we're not still really doing, you know, what we watched recently, because I saw some great stuff.
Just TIFF stuff?
TIFF stuff. I'd like to give a shout-out, if I could, to the movie Breathe, which will be expanding soon. It's a French mm-hmm. film directed by Melanie Laurent, who was in Inglourious Bastards and Beginners.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about two girls in France and their friendship. And it's a harrowing look at female friendships.
Is this... Wait a second.
What?
Because is this the anti-Queen of Earth?
It's so much better than Queen of Earth. It's a billion times better than Queen of Earth. Another film I saw that was a billion times better than Queen of Earth, even though it kind of treads similar territory, was Sparrows, which is at TIFF. There's a review of it now, but I don't know where or when you'll be able to see it. Which is one of the things that I hate about festivals. I've been waiting for over a year to somehow get a hold on of a movie called Magical Girl, which was one of the best films I saw at TIFF last year. I don't think I'll ever be able to see it again, guys.
Does it not have distribution?
I don't think it does. It's got a Blu-ray in Spain, but they don't have English subtitles.
Oh, that's sad.
I could watch it. I had to have to try to just remember what they were saying. I could never show it to anyone else.
Someday some little rinky-dink distribution company will get their hands on it. Who knows when that'll happen?
I don't know why you wouldn't just put it on the line somewhere.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's fucking Vimeo, that shit. Anyway, Blu-rays. This is a very slapdash episode. Blu-rays. We have Furious 7.
Yeah.
Everybody loved Furious 7, right?
Good stuff.
We also have the live-action Cinderella.
Oh, the live-action Cinderella?
That's literally what I just said.
You went out for a second, so I couldn't hear you. Sorry.
Anyway, live-action Cinderella. We also have Love and Mercy, which stars John Cusack and Paul Dano, both as Brian Williams. Wilson. Damn it.
That would be interesting.
Brian Williams is Brian Williams in Brian Williams, the Brian Williams story. Good. Wait, does he? I've heard various things about Love and Mercy. I've heard it's kind of like half good, and half like the John Cusack. Is the John Cusack part is like not as good as the Paul Dano part?
I've heard that.
Yeah,
I can't say for sure though. I haven't seen it.
I do love John Cusack though. I'll probably watch it.
Okay, I will definitely put my hat in the ring for Furious 7.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should see Furious 7.
Speaking of John Cusack, did anyone see Dragon Blade?
No.
Yeah, I was going to mention
that. Did you actually watch that?
I want to see it so bad because there are trailers that, and I'm sure this isn't true, but whoever edited the trailers for this film makes it seem as if this is a homoerotic love triangle between John Cusack, Jackie Chan, and Adrian Brody.
Okay, now I'm interested.
It is, like, look up, there's one trailer specifically where John Cusack is chained up sort of gladiator style. And then, of course, it's like a fantasy period film, so everyone's wearing, like, gilded, like, armor. And he's chained up, and Adrian Brody is the villain, and he's talking to him, and he's getting really, really close to him. And I'm like, if these dudes kiss, I will lose my mind. Like, it is very suggestive. Which is probably the only reason I want to watch this film. But yeah. Because actually, I've seen
it.
Check
it out, ladies and gentlemen. Is it in theaters?
It's not in theaters. It's streaming. But it's... I've actually read a couple reviews that say it's like actually not bad. It's kind of a fun romp, so...
Okay. Sure.
Whatever.
Get a word for it.
Whatever. You love...
I love...
You what was the battle Los Angeles?
Los Angeles?
You have no room to talk.
Whatever, bro. I think that that's a good movie.
Ugh. All right.
Yeah. Well. So, what are we watching? What are we watching next week? I believe that we will be discussing either Black Mass or Everest.
I would much rather do Black Mass.
So I think how it goes is that Black Mass is going wide next week. Everest is going wide the next week. And then Sicario goes wide the next week. So even though these are all being released pretty much on top of each other, we will go through them as they become the most wide.
Mm.
So nice. I believe Black Mass will be first next week. Follow our Twitter and tune in next week to see if I'm right about that, because I could be wrong. We could end up talking about The Intern.
Oh, I really want to see The Intern.
You want to see it?
Yeah, it looks charming.
I won't lie. I saw the trailer for the first time, and it was not as stupid looking as I thought.
Well, Rene Russo wants to get way up on De Niro.
That's the one weird part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
But I mean,
Nancy Meyers makes some good films.
I don't know, man. This whole old intern.
Such a delight.
But, like, whereas in The Internship, it was played for laughs, like, this one seems to like, advocate that, you know, Robert De Niro's with it. He's still got some shit to do.
Wow, you guys, man.
Look, Danny and I will have a special episode about The Intern.
Yeah, we'll talk about it, and you can not.
Yeah, you can not talk about it.
It'll just be you two?
Yeah.
That's
cute.
Yeah,
we'll be gushing about the wit and...
We could also, talk about The Green Inferno.
No!
Stonewall.
Oh, God.
Why, I've heard you not into The Green Inferno?
No, good God, no.
That just sounds disturbing.
It is the cinematic debut of, what's that woman's name? Ferreira? Sky Ferreira, I think?
Sure.
Am I wrong about that?
Oh, okay.
Sky Ferreira.
I think. I'm almost...
Who is Sky Ferreira?
She's kind of like an alt pop star.
According to IMDb...
It might not be her.
She has been in Putty Hill, IRL. Oh, I think those are both shorts. Yeah, Green Inferno.
So it is Sky Ferreira?
Yes.
Wow, I was right.
It's funny, though, because they have a bunch of other posters, but that's all the things she's been soundtracked on.
That's weird.
Like Vampire Diaries, Mean Girls 2. Did you know there was a Mean Girls 2?
A lot of people want to forget that there's a Mean Girls 2.
Larry Crown, Vampire Academy.
Oof.
Well, this girl's just the best, ain't she?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Okay, so anyway, I don't even remember what order I said movies were coming in, but hey, guess what? We're going to be talking about, in no particular order, Sicario, Everest, and Black Mass. And then when it hits, we'll be talking about The Martian.
Mm-hmm.
We got a good run of films coming up, guys, so stay tuned. Danny King, where can we find you online in the meantime?
Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin and always on the hunt for other URLs.
God damn it. Amanda Waltz. I almost called you Amanda Knox. Is that weird?
Well,
you don't
depends.
Have to answer that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That okay.
Yeah,
so I'm at Media Waltz on Twitter.
Okay.
You can also find me Media Waltz on Letterboxd, and which I need to update. I haven't updated that in a while.
The only way I can do it is if I update it immediately.
I've been busy, man. Wedding planning. I got time for Letterboxd.
Planning a wedding. You just go there. You say yes, and then you.
But I want to write about it. I don't want to just. I don't just want to give a star score and that's it.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the wedding.
Oh, no. Oh. Wait.
I thought you were like, I just want to write about the wedding. I was like, oh, okay, well, you could do that too.
No.
Then you brought up the star score, and I was like, hopefully 5.
Anyway, you can also read my blog, Steel Cinema, on WordPress, and that's about it.
All right. You can find me on thefilmstage.com. I got some reviews up there. Review for Breathe, review for Sparrows. Check them out. And you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/BrianJRoman. My personal site, dearfilm.net. And I'm on Letterboxd. You can find me on Letterboxd, Brian J. Roman. That's about it. I don't really write anything on Letterboxd. I just give star ratings, though. Because I don't have time for that bullshit.
You know, I don't want to half-ass it.
Well,
like some people. Like some
battle
Los Angeles lovers.
As a way to keep... God damn it. I'm just using it as a way to keep my list for this year in order so I don't have to spend a month freaking out at the end about what's in my top 10.
Now I hear you.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Tune in next time.